The case this morning is number 15-3134, DeSantis against the MSPB. Mr. Peterman.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Jeremy Peterman as amicus curiae. This case turns on the answer to a single question. When Congress decided to restore to FAA employees the right to appeal personnel actions to the Merit Systems Protection Board, did Congress restore the full package of appeal rights FAA employees enjoyed before the before Congress stripped them of their appeal rights in the DOT Act?
Your theory is that the Ford Act requires that employees be treated as being in the competitive service for appeal purposes.
It requires treating those employees who would have been in the competitive service in 1996 as if they were in the competitive service for appeal purposes.
Right, but wouldn't the result of that be that the Khorodashi and Roche cases would have come out the other way?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think in Roche, this court was very careful to rely on the concession that Roche was not in the competitive service.
But if Roche had been treated in the competitive service, he would have won, right?
He would have, but the court
noted. The case would have come out differently.
The court noted in note three.
No. But the case would have come out differently, right?
Had Roche made that argument, the case would have come out differently.
And the same is true of Khorodashi, right?
Well, at Khorodashi, the court found that the petitioner could appeal because he was in the he was a preference eligible and he met the
correct. But the analysis would have been different because they treated him there as being in the accepted service under 7511, right?
Correct. But again, the argument wasn't made in either Roche or in Khorodashi. In both of the cases,
can I ask you, were all FAA employees before April 96 in the competitive service, or only some jobs?
Nearly all were in the competitive service.
So if it's not an all or nothing proposition, what happens to a post 1996 FAA employee in a new job title? And the counterpart question to that is, what happens to the Transportation Security Administration?
So taking the first question first, under 2102, section 2102, the competitive service is the default. So all positions are in the default unless they're accepted by statute, or if they're political appointees, or if they're in the senior executive service. So if Congress created a new position that was the type of position that wouldn't have been accepted under a law, rule, or regulation in 1996, then I think they should be treated as if they were in the competitive service. And the Transportation Security Administration, that agency was always an accepted service agency. It was never in the competitive service, so I think they should be treated as if they are.
But how do you even ask the question? So tell me if my premises are wrong. Congress created the TSA in November of 2001, didn't exist before, and it says in, 114N, 40122 applies.
Right. So Congress
How would 4122G3 even have any meaning as to TSA?
So Congress passed that statute 2 months after September 11th as part of the massive Department of Homeland Security bill. I think Congress was scrambling to figure out what personnel system should apply to the TSA, and it just copied the FAA system whole cloth. I don't think Congress gave particular consideration to how it would apply here.
But how would it work? Assuming that this was extremely low on any priority
right.
list
so
of
how
things
it,
to think about.
How it would work is I think you would just treat TSA employees as if they were accepted service employees. And it's important to point out that the rules and regulations authorizing appeals haven't meaningfully changed since 1996. So we're really just talking about what status the person is being treated as for the purpose of applying those laws, rules, and regulations that authorize appeals.
And if there had been created by regulation or statute some new appeal right since April 1st, 1996, your view is that that would not apply to an FAA employee.
Right. The court already crossed that line in the Morse case when it held that the Veterans Employment Opportunity Act doesn't apply to FAA employees. And I think that highlights how strange the government's interpretation is. Because on the government's view, Congress passed the Ford Act to restore FAA employees the right to appeal, but it gave them a package of appeal rights that's even more limited than the package that other employees in the accepted service enjoy in other agencies, because they don't get the benefit of any amendments to the provisions authorizing appeal that came after 1996.
Yeah, but I'm not, why is that so odd? I mean, they restored some appeal rights. They only wanted to restore some appeal rights. The question is what they intended to do. It doesn't seem to me that there's a broad congressional intent that suggests they should be treated as competitive employees. And, I mean, I think the government is wrong in suggesting that 7511 has anything to do with this. I mean, that's just not relevant here because both the definition of competitive and accepted service employees excludes probationary employees. The real question is really under 210.101 of the regulation, which I assume you're familiar with, right? Which tells us that this provision does not apply to employees who are in the accepted service, right? So, correct?
315. Sorry, I didn't quite hear.
210.101. Are you familiar with that one?
The regulation 210.101?
Yeah.
No, Your Honor.
Well, I think it's the regulation that governs here because it says it deals with applicability of various parts of the regulations, and it says that parts 315 through 339 apply to all positions in the competitive service, and except as specified by an individual part, these parts do not apply to positions in the accepted service. It's this provision that the government should be relying on, but doesn't seem to be, for suggesting that this appeal is improper because it, provision 805 and 806 don't apply here.
Right. So I guess I have two things to say in response. The first point is, when Congress decided to restore the right to appeal to the right as it existed as of March 31st, 1996, that was a very significant decision. Congress departed from what it had done in both the DOT Act and the Ford Act when it wanted to make portions of Title V applicable to the FAA. In both of those acts, the Congress simply listed the present-day form of those provisions in Section 4122G2's list of provisions that apply to the FAA. Congress even did that with 5 U.S.C. 7701, which establishes the procedures for appeals before the board. But Congress didn't do that for the provisions that authorized MSPB FAA employees to appeal. Instead, Congress created a system where the procedures that govern appeals before the board are governed under present-day law, and the provisions authorizing specific FAA employees to appeal apply under the law as of March 1996. And I don't think Congress would have done that if it could have achieved its purpose in the way it traditionally had by simply incorporating the present-day law into 4122G2's list of Title V provisions.
But what makes you think that they wanted to use a different definition of employee for these people than would be used for all other purposes, to treat them for appellate purposes only as being within the competitive service? That seems like kind of an odd thing, doesn't it?
Because I think that's the only thing that gives meaning to that as of March 31st, 1996 language.
How is that true? Because even as accepted service employees, they have certain appeal rights which would have been restored.
Right, but to restore those appeal rights, Congress did not need to tie the right to appeal to the right as it existed as of March 31st, 1996.
Well, maybe they didn't want, as Moore suggested, new appeal rights to be covered.
So I think it's fairly far-fetched that Congress, who's usually incredibly motivated to protect veterans, who included the substantive law granting veterans veteran preferences, intended the as of March 31st, 1996 language solely to prevent preference-eligible FAA employees from appealing to the board. I think Congress had something broader
solely?
In mind.
I'm not following that. I mean, it seems to me they said, here's a set of appeal rights, hypothetically, for accepted service employees, and we want to give that to the FAA employees who qualify as being in the accepted service. So the statute has meaning in the sense that it gave them those appeal rights, right?
Sure, the statute has meaning, but Congress had no need to tie the right to appeal to that. As of March 31st, 1996 language, I submit, doesn't have meaning, because Congress could have conveyed that purpose entirely under present-day law. And if it wanted to exclude the Veterans Equal Opportunity Act, it could have simply said that Section 3330 doesn't apply to the FAA. But that's not what Congress did.
Some of this is confusing to me, but is the point you just made equivalent to saying Congress could have said in 4022G3, blah, 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 any action that is appealable on the effective, by law or regulation, on the effective date of this statute? Or just is appealable under any law, rule, or regulation?
Judge Toronto. I think that would restore the same limited right to appeal that accepted service employees.
One of the things I've been trying to think about a little bit is, let me ask you, what is the universe of appeal rights that would be different between the treating all FAA employees as competitive service employees, or all but the ones that had been specifically carved out as already not competitive before April 1996. So there is obviously some difference in, let's call them, non-preference eligible probationary employees. What about in the regulatory, the head of jurisdiction that is not created specifically by statute, but is authorized by statute and is created in throughout 5 CFR? How many appeal rights are there, for example, in 315 to 339, the chapters that I think Judge Dyke referred to as generally speaking excluding accepted service employees?
So for the probationary employees, it's just the very narrow appeal right from 315.806. The right to appeal if the agency fails to provide basic notice and an opportunity to respond before terminating you, or if you have a credible allegation that the agency terminated you from your position based on your marital status or your partisan political affiliation. So for probationary employees, we're really talking about a very, very, very narrow category of rights. More broadly speaking, for accepted service employees who are now in the FAA, I think the package of rights that they would get to appeal is the same, but they'd get to appeal in 1 year instead of 2 years because you'd be treating them as competitive service employees for the purpose of definitional provisions such as 7511, which authorizes appeals under 7513.
But are there other, so if you look throughout parts 315 to 339, besides 805 and 806, are there other appeal rights that we're talking about, or is it just those ones that you mentioned?
I don't want to mislead the court, but I believe that the ones that would turn on the decision in this court are just the one, in this case, are just the ones that I've mentioned.
Well, I think there could be others because the provision that I read you earlier deals with the entirety of 315. I don't know what other appeal rights might be conveyed by 315. Are you saying there aren't any other appeal rights conveyed by 315?
Not that I believe would turn, not for that would turn on whether or not somebody is a probationary employee treated as if they are in the competitive service.
The provision 210.101 is about the applicability of all of those parts, most of that, and you're telling me virtually all of it, is about a set of employment rights that aren't specifically appeal rights.
Right.
What I'm trying to understand is what's the subcategory that's specifically about appeal rights to try to get a sense about whether your interpretation of 40122G3 or the government's, what the range of consequences are.
Right. So if this court looks at 5 CFR 1201.3.
I'm sorry, say it again.
5 CFR
1201.3.
It spells out the appellate jurisdiction of the MSPB and lists all of the appeal rights. And going through that, I believe the difference between our interpretation and the government's interpretation is that MSPB or FAA employees can appeal adverse actions under 7513 just 1 year earlier because they'd qualify as an employee.
That's the Roche.
That's the Roche case, and It's important to point out that that's not Mr. DeSantis because he's a probationary employee and he's never argued that he can appeal there. And termination of the probationary employment, which is the 315.805.806. There are some other provisions that apply to performance-based actions, but those both apply to competitive service and accepted service. That's 4303. And the same definitional treatment would apply there as in the 7511 context.
So what we're talking about here in terms of consequences are one, whether 805 applies and whether in other circumstances you use the definition in 7511 for competitive employees or accepted service employees.
That's correct, Judge Link. And I think whether or not 805 applies is very closely tied to whether 806 applies, because 806 specifically gives the right to apply for a failure of the agency to provide the 805 procedures. And 4122G3 says that you can appeal under any regulation that authorized appeal. And 315806 specifically authorized the appeal for the failure.
Can I answer just one other question? On the assumption that in November of 2001, when Congress created the TSA, it was not thinking about details like the kind that we're dealing with here today. But in 2012, Congress returned to 40122G3 and added a new sentence. By then, there had been 10 years of application of that to TSA. Was there any discussion that you're aware of how the TSA statute was to apply, even though how the statute was to apply to the TSA employees for whom you cannot ask the hypothetical question, how were they treated in March of 1996, because there wasn't any TSA?
Right. I haven't come across any of that in legislative history, and I think the reason for that might have been that probationary appeals are very, very, very rare. This is the first time that this question has been presented to this court in 16 years since Congress passed the Ford Act. So I think Congress may simply just have not have been aware of it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Well, just to wrap up that point, that's not before us to decide, is it, in your view? That is what would happen? What would be the consequences of a decision in your favor?
No,
that
Judge.
It doesn't resolve this particular case. Is that right? It just goes back to...
Correct, Judge.
Okay. Right, we'll save you rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And let's hear from the MSPB. Ms. Lederer.
May it please the Court. Petitioner's proposed reading of the Ford Act would effectively overrule Section 347 of the DOT Act, which removed FAA employees from the competitive service and exempted them from Title V with a list of exceptions.
But Congress, to some significant extent, did that in part in the Ford Act.
Congress added...
The question is how... to what extent?
Yes, Congress, however, left the personnel system that was created by the DOT Act in place. Congress simply added in board appeal rights to the list of exceptions to Title V. So because the DOT Act removed FAA employees from the competitive service, they're no longer hired under the competitive service rules. They're hired into the accepted service, as petitioner was. And so there's no precedent for a finding that certain employees are exempt from the competitive service in regard to hiring, but when it comes to firing, the competitive service rules have to be followed, which is essentially what petitioner is arguing for the FAA employees in this case.
Do you have a different view about the range of consequences question that we discussed a few minutes ago with Mr. Peterman, that there's obviously a difference in as to who constitutes a relevant probationary employee, depending on whether you're accepted or competitive, and then there's within the regulations, the 805-806 difference. Are there other differences that as a practical matter we're talking about?
Primarily it goes to how long the probationary period is for somebody to qualify as an employee for appeals under Chapter 75.
As in the Roche case.
I'm sorry?
As in the Roche case.
Yes, exactly. And also for whether these regulations, 5 CFR 315.805 and 806 apply, which is what petitioner is primarily arguing. And there's never been any dispute that those regulations apply only to competitive service employees, which means employees hired under competitive service appointments, subject to the competitive service hiring rules, which are very detailed, as your honors know. Given the fact that when Congress passed the Ford Act, it said nothing to reverse the DOT Act's provision which exempted the FAA from the competitive service, I don't think there's any basis to infer that they somehow did that just by saying, just by restoring MSPB appeal rights. As we pointed out in our brief, the accepted service employees do have certain appeal rights to the MSPB, and those rights were restored by the Ford Act. So also, accepting petitioner's argument that apparently all FAA employees should now have competitive service appeal rights with regard to board appeals because their, quote, predecessors had them would lead to absurd results, because how would you determine whether the same position existed in 1996 as the position is being appealed now? For example, petitioner is alleging that his position was in the competitive service in 1996. We know that there was a position with his job title in 1996, but we have no information in the record as to if the duties had substantially changed or if that's even the same position that exists now, effectively. Also, what about new positions that have been created since 1996 in the FAA? Are those employees to be treated as if they're, quote, standing in the shoes of their predecessors who didn't exist? It's just, it would create such a complicated and difficult...
What is the effect that your view gives to this obviously unusual statutory language as of March 31st, 1996? What work is that language doing in the statute in your view?
Well, I believe the most literal reading of it, given from the, is looking at the language that immediately precedes it in the statute, which is, quote, any action that was appealable to the board under any law, rule, or regulation as of March 31st, 1996. That seems to refer to whatever laws, rules, or regulations existed as of March 31st, 1996. And as petitioner acknowledges, the board and this court have found that subsequently enacted legislation after that date does not apply to the FAA employees. Petitioner argues that this date refers to the status of employees as of that date, but I believe it's more likely that it refers to the laws that were in existence as of that date.
Well, it refers to the word, uses the word action instead
Correct.
Of employees, which action sounds like hiring, firing, or firing, suspension, whatever.
Well, yeah, if you're referring to... that also goes to the Roche case and whether we're importing the definitions in the statutes that the petitioner is appealing under. For example, in Chapter 75, that defines actions that are appealable to the board. That word action has a specific meaning in that law. And so given the fact that it's modifying, effectively modifying law, rule, or regulation, because it says any action that was appealable under any law, rule, or regulation, as this court found in Roche, you have to look to those laws, rules, or regulations and how they define actions that are appealable under those laws. The Ford Act itself doesn't contain any definition of employee or action that I'm aware of. So you have to look to the statute that's enabling the appeal to define those words. And also I would note that in Roche, this case, or this court said that it will not infer Congress's intent to widen the category of personnel who qualify as employees without a clear expression of its intent to do so.
Do you agree that Roche would come out differently under the petitioner's theory here?
Well, petitioner's arguing that he's not appealing under Chapter 75.
Well, no, of course he's not.
But treating
FAA employees as being under the competitive service would mean that in Roche the case came out the other way because they were treated as being in the accepted service.
Right. In Roche, I believe the employee was in a probationary period under the accepted
yeah.
service. So he, if he had served the amount of time to qualify as an employee under the competitive service, he would have had appeal rights, and that would have a big impact on that case and many other cases brought by probationary employees. So, as I mentioned, with regard to the petitioner's argument that for purposes of board appeals, the phrase an employee of the administration should be read to include anyone who works for the FAA, that question was already resolved by this court in Roche. where the court rejected the appellant's argument that the FAA's internal regulations should define
Just to be clear, I thought it was really plain that the issue we have in front of us was not presented in Roche. And Roche, in fact, relied affirmatively on the idea that the argument taking the definition of employee would have given Mr. Roche more than he would have had available on March 31st, 1996.
Right, but it also goes to this court's interpretation of Congress's intent in passing the Ford Act and whether the Ford Act changed the relevant definitions of employee for purposes of the statutes that enable appeal to the board. So in that sense, I do think it's relevant to this case.
But the core of their argument is treat this man by turning the clock back to March 31st, 1996, look at his position and ask what rights he would have had. That's what he gets now. Your position is different from that. Your position says look at his current job status and ask what that current job status would have allowed him to do by way of appeal back on March 31st, 1996, right?
Yes, Your Honor, because his appeal rights depend on his job status. You can't just say this person is in the accepted service, but we're going to pretend he's in the competitive service because some theoretical person that worked for the agency in 96, which may or may not have been in the same position that he's in, was in the competitive service. Part of the competitive service regulations is you have to go through certain rules and processes in order to hire somebody into the competitive service. They're much more explicit and stringent than those in the accepted service. And part of that is when you fire that person, you also have to go through more. And Congress's intent in the DOT Act was to give the FAA the flexibility to hire outside those rules. And the flip side of that is they get to fire people outside of those rules because those employees don't have competitive service rights. He's trying to appeal under 315.805 and 806, which explicitly only refer to competitive service, and they're based on that statutory and regulatory scheme. It's frankly a little odd that we would take an employee that doesn't have appeal rights under the statute. If a theoretical competitive service or accepted service employee at the FAA had worked there in 1996, he would not be able to appeal under those regulations either because they apply to the competitive service. So our argument is that you have to look at the status of those employees and then see what rights the employees with that status would have had in 1996, not say, well, another employee hired under a different scheme would have had more rights and therefore we should give it to this employee. There's simply no evidence anywhere in the legislative history or in the statute that Congress intended to do that. And so we just think inferring that would be too great a leap for this court to make as far as Congress's intent. And if the court has no further questions, I will complete my argument and just ask you to affirm the decision of the board.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Ms. Eder. Mr. Peterman.
Thank you, Judge Freeman. I'd just like to make three quick points in response. First, the MSPB argued that we're trying to widen the scope of appeal rights. We're simply trying to give FAA employees the appeal rights they would have had they been working for the agency as of March 31st, 1996. When FAA employees lobbied Congress to restore their rights in 1997, they were former competitive service employees who had just been transferred to the accepted service and would have wanted the competitive service rights that they had in 1996. Second,
the fact that they wanted that doesn't mean that they got it, right?
That's of course true, Judge Dyke, but when Congress decided to restore the right as it existed as of March 31st, 1996, it suggests that that was in fact what Congress intended to do, because the only reason that I've been able to come up with for why Congress put in that language was to restore to FAA employees the rights they would have had as if they were in the competitive service. And the government hasn't offered any other explanation for that language in response to Judge Toronto's question.
Well, just address directly, if you would. I gather that the government's reading of the language is take the current employee and that current employee's status and then apply to that employee with that status the laws, rules, and regulations that existed on March 31st, 1996. What's the problem with that interpretation?
So Congress had just no need to make the laws, rules, and regulations as of March 31st, 1996, the applicable laws, rules, and regulations if it intended only to restore the right to appeal as accepted service employees. It could have accomplished that purpose in the way it made other Title V provisions applicable to the FAA in both the DOT Act and with other Ford Act provisions that govern the Merit Systems Protection Board simply by listing their present law in 40122G2's list.
Well, unless they wanted to freeze the appeal rights for accepted service employees as of that date in 1996.
There's no evidence in the legislative history that they intended to freeze the rights in order to prevent FAA employees from acting on some hypothetical change that may happen in the future. But we do know that Congress was motivated to restore FAA employees' rights because it said that in the legislative history. And the fact that it linked the restoration to the last day FAA employees were in the competitive service suggests to me that they intended to restore the rights that FAA employees had when they were in the competitive service. With the remainder of my time, I just want to make one quick point on the absurd results point. First, in this case, it's very easy to know that Mr. DeSantis would have been in the competitive service in 1996 because on two occasions this court held that aviation safety inspectors, Mr. DeSantis' precise position, were in the competitive service. That's the Ben Cosme versus DOT decision and Spike versus DOT. Again, for some hypothetical position, I think you simply look to whether there's a law that would have exempted that position from the accepted service. And if you have that position, if such a law, then you treat them as accepted service, and otherwise you treat them as competitive service.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Peterman, Ms. Lederer. Case is taken under submission. That concludes this afternoon's
argument. Could I just, as I'm sure all of us wanted to thank Mr. Peterman for undertaking this representation.
Indeed. We appreciate the amicus coming forward and helping us to try and understand these issues and these close questions.
Thank you.
Thank you as well for the MSPB.